Hi, I'm Andy Herman of the Pack a Day podcast. I'm here to tell you about Tick Pick. Tick Pick should be your very first choice to buy football tickets because they save fans money by never charging any service fees ever. Tick Pick is the exclusive ticketing partner for the Pack a Day podcast and the Blue Wire Network.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome everybody to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks again for joining us today. My name is Dan Connick, and joining me today to talk about another harrowing Green Bay Packers victory. It's my two partners here. Back together, finally, the whole crew, after several weeks that we've just, like, through weird scheduling and everything else that we've just not been able to get the trio back together here, and the forces combine, finally again this week to talk about this win over the Bengals. It's Janelle Mackey and Eli Bergovitz. Guys, how are you doing? How are you recovering after Sunday's game?
Yeah, I mean, luckily, it was finally a noon game, which I really appreciate because then I had the whole rest of the day to just comprehend and relax from what had happened and enjoy the rest of football for the day, you know, get the stressful win out of the way. And I am exhausted because, Dan, you said staying up last night to watch the game, even though it was delayed, was tomorrow Janelle's problem. Well, tomorrow Janelle is exhausted now and she's hitting her wall as we record this. So I am ready to get this done. Go shower and go to bed like an old lady.
Yesterday Dan decided tomorrow Dan didn't need to stay up and watch the last quarter of that beatdown from the Buffalo Bills. So thank you at least to the Bills for making it a runaway at the end there. But Eli, how are you hanging in after after Sunday?
I am doing good. I mean, much like the both of you, I think we're all still like coming down from that game. Adrenaline highs and lows, and I mean, honestly, just exhaustion. Like, I don't know the last time we've had a game, you know, go just that up and down, that back and forth into overtime, talking about nearly five quarters of football that was just, you know, tooth and nail back and forth the whole way. And while it was obviously exciting, it drained me for at least the next couple of weeks. So we need a nice, easy win next week because I don't know if I can handle much more, you know, Mason Crosby heroism. Even though I love seeing it, I think we could take a couple of weeks off from needing that kind of a win.
Well, in this game, it definitely gave me, was it 2018 Vikings Packers vibes? I don't remember what week it was. It was early September.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Matt and I, back when Matt and I were just a duo, we had to put out an episode after that tie, and we called it Tie Tuesday. So I'm really glad that we're not having Tie Tuesday Part 2 coming out. Because nothing worth talking about a tie.
I don't know, man. There was a certain point after the second or third missed field goal in that game, I'm like, at this point, just get the ball and run the clock out and just be done with it. Because I don't want any more of these drama-filled missed kicks like this. I just want it to end. I just want the sweet release of death at this point. I was so emotionally drained after that game.
Oh, yeah, what a day. At least, you know, it's nice to come out of a game like that with a win. I'm glad that Mason Crosby was able to kick the game winner so he doesn't have to sit on that game. I mean, he'll probably think about it, but, you know, being able to make one going into this week instead of, you know, them not going for it on fourth down. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, I don't really know where I stand right now. And then, you know, maybe he has a rough game against the Bears. So I was really glad to see him go out there and finally nail that one. And it sounds like just from what I've heard in pressers and stuff like that, it sounded like he wasn't flinching. He was ready to go, and that's just the Mason Crosby way. So it was awesome to see him go out there, and the way his teammates had his back and the coaching staff. And truthfully, Packers Twitter, I had somebody ask me today, you know, what was it like on Twitter with all the Mason Crosby stuff? And I was like, I saw absolutely no negativity. Mason Crosby is like the golden boy in the Packers organization who can do no wrong because he's done so much for this team where people, they don't even want to badmouth him. There is no forgiveness like Mason Crosby missing a field goal forgiveness.
I was just gonna say that I was actually personally surprised that, I mean, I guess I wasn't surprised, but I was, you know, it was refreshing to see, like Jen said, Packers Twitter and Packer fans not turning on Mason Crosby after, yes, some bad missed kicks, but there was never a moment that, at least nothing that I saw, that was, you know, get him off the field, we're done with Crosby, you know, washed up. This, I mean, we all know how good Mason Crosby is. No one's perfect. Every kicker has an off day, a weird game. A lot of it is mental. And it was, like Jen said, I think really, really important for Crosby's confidence moving forward for that game to end with him hitting a field goal as opposed to even a touchdown for the Packers, or obviously a tie, but specifically for him to hit a field goal and to really drill it right down the middle. You know, I think that's really going to put a lot of our worries to bed about Mason Crosby going forward.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw a lot more people on Twitter and social media saying like the whole like, we're seeing fans badmouth Mason Crosby. I don't want to hear it. You know, people like defending him, but I'm like looking through my whole feed and I'm with you guys. I didn't see anybody like badmouthing Mason Crosby. I think there's more behind that game from Mason Crosby than just Mason Crosby. I think we'll get into it more as we dive into the episode here. But since it is a Tuesday episode with us, we're going to play a little stock up and stock down. I think this is the first time that we've done this stock up, stock down report where I think there was plenty to do. There was plenty on both sides for this one. Like,
right.
In the past, it was either a heck of a lot of stock down or a lot of, they were hard to find some people to fault. And I think today, after Sunday, we got a nice mix of both, which I guess makes it a little bit easier for us. I would much rather just prefer to do the try really hard to find negatives each time.
Yeah. Is this Eli's first game of stock up, stock down with us?
I believe it is.
Together this season. We haven't.
I can't remember if Eli, were you? Because we did it after the Saints game, and then we did it after
49ers.
That was you. You guys did that one, right?
No, because I think you and I did that one, didn't we?
No, because I was a. Oh no, you're right. That's right. We did do that. We did do the 49ers because that was 2 weeks. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, this would be the first. All right.
Welcome, Eli.
All right. Well,
yeah, Eli,
Would you like to christen us here with the first stock up, the first candidate for stock up?
Yeah, I would love to. I'm very appreciative of this honor. And also, yeah, I know that this is, I think, my first episode during the season, and I don't anticipate missing any more going forward. So I'm looking forward to being here every other week. So the first stock up, I mean, it might just be easy, but I just have to continue to talk about Devondre Campbell and how just unbelievably good he's been and how important he's been to the Packers defense. He's just all over the field, sideline to sideline, making plays against the run, making plays against the pass. He has two interceptions this year. I believe that leads the team. He's just in almost every category, not only leading the Packers, but amongst the leaders at the linebacker position across the NFL. And he's really been, I mean, for years and years and years, you said, you know, we need a middle linebacker. And every draft went by and we didn't address it. Every free agency went by, we didn't really address it. You know, yeah, we brought in Kirksey last year, didn't really work out. And you could say, you know, on the surface that Campbell was kind of like a Kirksey signing, but obviously the results have been very different. And Campbell has been, I mean, just everything and more than we ever could have hoped for.
Yeah, I mean, he every week, every time I do a show on whatever platform it is, it's always Devondre Campbell getting talked about with how much, you know, each week that goes on, he's just getting better and better and better. And, I mean, he had that pick in overtime. You know, it was just a gift from Burrow. unfortunately not being able to capitalize on there. He's making the plays, and he's just a menace out there right now. And I can't believe, you know, I think it was Rodgers who said, I don't know how he was on the streets and we were able to pick him up. You know, it's crazy how quiet the conversations about him were in the offseason. And now it's like, who is this guy? I can't believe that we were able to just find him the way that we did. And the way that he's been exploding on that defense, it's what this defense has needed for a long time.
Yeah. I was going to say, Zvonder Gamble was on my list too, and I'm glad Eli brought him up, because he's been the unsung hero the last several weeks. And like you said, Janelle, it's crazy that a guy that's playing at this level and having such an impact on this defense was not talked about at all. We've said it before, but it's still crazy to me that nobody, like the local media, none of us really, I felt like, were talking that much about Devondre Campbell. It wasn't a Smith Brothers level signing, you know. People, kind of like what Eli said, I kind of felt more like a Christian Kirksey vibe again. But man, you just can't underrate what Devondre Campbell has done. The only thing I will say, Devondre, next time just run it into get it into the end zone.
Right.
Just forget all the other stuff and just get us in the end zone and be done with it. It would make the job a lot easier. Janelle, your first stock up.
My first one is going to go to the new pass catcher for the Packers, A.J. Dillon, receiving his first touchdown reception from Aaron Rodgers. I think just seeing him get involved more in that side of the game, it's making him more of a dual threat. You know, we saw Aaron Jones on the earlier side of his career start to develop that, and we've seen how much of a threat he can be. And seeing A.J. Dillon kind of work his way into that role as well, I really, really like seeing that from him, because, yeah, he's a freight train on the line, but to also be able to rely on throwing him the ball out there like that, I think it just, you know, it expands your weapons for Aaron Rodgers, and it makes it harder for other teams to figure out, you know, what you're going to do on offense when you have all these tools in your toolbox.
Yeah, no, completely. And I think the biggest thing is, like you said there at the end, the ability for him to catch passes out of the backfield like that just increases the flexibility of this offense like tenfold, you know. Mm-hmm. Because when it was Jamal Williams back there, he's a literal pass catcher. Like, he's almost a wide receiver at that point.
Yeah.
And Aaron Jones was really your only dual threat back there. And now A.J. Dillon, if A.J. Dillon even just the idea of him becoming a pass catcher out of the backfield changes the whole makeup of that offense.
Yeah, no, I mean, so I heard you talking and kind of comparing him to Jamal. But like you said, I mean, Jamal really was almost like a receiver. Then you get A.J. Dillon the ball, and then those running back instincts kick in, and also just his freakish size. And, you know, I mean, you get him the ball in space, and he's already able to pick up some speed, and he's going up against defensive backs as opposed to defensive tackles. It's going to be nearly impossible for teams to tackle him. I mean, they're going to need 3, 4, 5 guys to try to bring him down, because there's no way, if he catches the ball on a screen in space, you know, you're going to have one safety kind of. He's just too big and too strong. So I love the Packers getting him more involved in the passing game for sure.
Well, and I think with that, his stock automatically has to go up simply because of his tweet afterwards when he said, I'm going to tell my grandchildren I was Davante Adams, or like, this was Davante Adams, I was Davante Adams. Like, I can just see him, you know, 40 years from now, living in Door County, telling his grandchildren about how he was a pass catcher like Davante Adams. It's just, you know, he's got that humor that goes along with it, and the humor automatically has to bump your stock up when you've got a personality like that.
He's sitting there in the mayor's mansion in Door County. Yeah.
Well, by then it'll probably be called like Door Dillon or something. It won't even be Door County anymore.
Dillon County.
Oh, that's good too.
Hashtag Dillon County. Get it trending on Twitter, everybody.
make shirts, make merch. You heard it here first on Pack-A-Day.
this got the wheels turning. All right. Speaking of Davante Adams, I'm going to go the obvious route for my first stock up, and it's Davante Adams. Like, how can you not have the game that he had on Sunday and stock not go up? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, just an outstanding game. And that's the thing is, it's crazy that the last couple of weeks, he's been the main target, you know? Like, mm-hmm. he's been the guy. And teams know that. Teams know that Davante Adams is the main guy now. They keep double bracketing him. They cover with the safety up top. And he's still having games like this. It's crazy. And it's not being forced, I feel like. You know, maybe it is, and I'm kind of missing it. It's just working. But it doesn't feel like, remember the Bucks game a couple of years ago, the Chargers game before that, where it was obvious they were trying to force stuff to Davante Adams and it wasn't working. This feels like it's just part of the offense now. You know, like this is just, it's working. It's there because Davante Adams is the wide open receiver or the guy that's getting himself open now, you know? So it's awesome to watch this offense work the way it does. And it's even better when it's working in a way where Davante Adams, your number one option, can be that wide open and just be an absolute game breaker like he is.
Yeah, and I mean, realistically, there was only the 50-50 ball Rodgers threw where, you know, Bengals picked it off. That was the only time where it really looked like Davante was being covered. Every other ball, it looked too easy. And I know that kind of going into this game, I didn't have a lot of fear against this Bengals DB group, but he embarrassed them with the way he played. A record career high 206 yards. I think going into the half, he on six receptions had over 100 yards and had already had the touchdown. So it was just, you know, even in that first half, it was an incredible day for Davante. And yeah, just to see how open he is, he makes it look so easy. And like, it's embarrassing to the DB group where it's like, who's got this guy? And it doesn't even matter who you throw on him because he's going to make you look like a fool. And I am ready for the Packers to throw all the money at him because you're not going to get another guy like that in this lifetime.
Yeah, Davante Adams is not, you're not just going to be finding another one of him in the draft or in free agency. He is, I mean, like you both said, everyone in the world knows where Aaron Rodgers is looking, and it simply does not matter. I mean, 16 targets, 12 receptions, I believe. Yeah, 16 targets, 11 receptions, 206 yards and a touchdown. I mean, it's in a way, it's almost like scary because it's like Davante Adams and then just a major drop off, not necessarily in talent, but just in the amount of targets and production you've seen from other pass catchers. But if people can't stop it, don't stop doing it. And right now, no one can stop it. Davante Adams playing single coverage, you know you're going to get beat. But now, even doubling him, and he's seeing plenty of double coverage, he is still beating it. Rodgers is finding ways to get him the ball. And I think some of the most interesting plays to me from Sunday were when you would see Rodgers, it was usually off play action, and he would hit Davante on that slant route. It probably happened 3 or 4 times throughout the game. And a lot of times that's, you know, you play action, one step, boom, ball's out of your hand. But there were times where Davante had to clear through traffic in the middle of the field, and that's when you'll see timing between a quarterback and receiver be off a little bit. And a lot of times, you know, that's when the ball will come in behind a receiver on a slant, and that could either lead to an incompletion or sometimes even an interception, depending on how tight the coverage is. And I was just so impressed that even when things weren't necessarily perfectly on timing, Rodgers and Adams were always able to connect on those slant routes, which are very much timing routes. And the timing wasn't always there, but they still managed to hit it. And then, I mean, just that in the fourth quarter, the 59-yard bomb to Adams, just it was just simply fly route, just go deep. But the way he was able to just burn through double coverage, Rodgers dropping in over the top in perfection. And again, much like the Devondre Campbell interception, not really able to capitalize, being forced to take a field goal. Not something you want to see, especially considering how amazing, I mean, historically amazing the Packers were in the red zone last year at scoring touchdowns, and most of this year as well. But obviously Sunday, it was not their best showing in the red zone. I expect that to change, you know, and them for them to improve as the season goes on. But yeah, I mean, them.
Yeah, the catch for Davante Adams, that long 57-yard bomb you're talking about, just like 15, 20 yards deep into the route, and he does that little pony kick and just freezes him for a hot second, and then he's gone. Like, you can't, there's no way to stop it. You know, it's amazing to watch a guy play his position like that. A guy, you know, we talk about Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback. It's amazing to watch the quarterback version of the wide receiver, or the Aaron Rodgers version of the wide receiver do the same thing. You know, I only have one other stock up in my list because I said I had Devondre Campbell listed in mine. And I was just going to say Aaron Jones because finally breaking 100 yards rushing on the season for a game. And I think I'm just going to give it to the whole rushing offense for the Packers.
It didn't even feel like Jones had that big of a day, which is what was surprising afterwards, seeing that he had reached 100 yards. I was like, I don't even remember him being that involved, which is crazy because, I mean, I think that game was just so overshadowed with the kicking people forget everything else that happened that game.
Well, and it wasn't like outside of that huge run at the end of the game, there was, I think he on the very first play, he had maybe like a 15, 10 yard run around the right side. But then other than that, it was a lot of 3 yard, 4 yard stuff. It wasn't like there was anything busting wide open, but the idea of not abandoning it over there was, you could argue at the end there, I think maybe they ran when maybe they shouldn't have, but neither here nor there. But just trusting this offensive line, a line that's banged up, has a lot of younger guys in there, guys that are moving around the offensive line, to trust them to handle that running load and really establish that run early on, I think was fantastic to see out of this offense. Like I said, especially with that offensive line that they have.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, and I say it every week on Open Book, or should I say every week, I make it there. But again, going forward, that should be every week. But I've said on Open Book, I've said it here, and I'll say it again. We all know, you know, Aaron Rodgers, especially like myself, I don't think, you know, you'll find many bigger fans of Aaron Rodgers than me, but this team, when they're at their best, it's when they're working off the run game. When Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon, or in the past Jamal Williams, they're the ones dictating the way the game is going to go. And then you get the play action and you get the defense to start worrying about the run. And that's when it's game over. Because if you're a defense against Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, and you have to play close to the line because you know there's a good run game going across from you, there's no way you're going to be able to stop Rodgers and Adams. Because Rodgers could go to the line, and even if it's a run call, we all know Rodgers has no problem checking out of that call, going to a pass, and he's going to hit Devontae or anyone else if that defense has to worry about the run, which is why, in my opinion, the Packers, unless they are simply forced to throw the ball, as in they're in a position where they're trailing by so much they cannot run it, they should be running it and just committing to the run as much as possible, because when the run game is effective, they're simply unstoppable. I don't know the exact stats, and maybe I'll look it up a little bit later and get back to you guys and maybe put it on Twitter, but I am willing to put a lot of money down that when the Packers have 100-plus rushing yards in the Matt LaFleur era, their record has to be phenomenal. Because when you see that run game be effective, that's when it opens up every other part of the offense. So, like you said, Dan, the whole rushing game as a whole I thought was great. I mean, to start the game, I mean, Jen, I think you even tweeted it, that it was going to be an Aaron Jones type of game because he looked really good out the gate. and they kind of got away from that. And again, I don't know if that's play calling or Aaron Rodgers checking out of certain calls, but if the Packers are winning, tied, or within a possession or two, and it's still relatively early in a game, I don't think they should ever just go away from the run. I think it's just so important. They're so talented there. There's simply no reason to get away from it, and it's only going to help you in the passing game moving on it throughout the game.
Packers football is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Packer tickets anymore. Because TickPick, that's T-I-C-K-P-I-C-K, is the original no-fee ticket site, and the only one you'll ever need is your go-to for all NFL tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all of their NFL tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices for the same seats at another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. Personally, I can't wait for that first game back at Lambeau Field, Packers-Lions with fans in the stands again. I've already got my tickets from TickPick, and I'll be there watching Monday Night Football in person. I absolutely cannot wait. Visit TickPick.com/Packaday today and use promo code Packaday to save $10 on your first order of Packers tickets.
I think just kind of transitioning from that, you kind of talking about the run game, and just before we get into the stock down, someone that I thought who stock needs to go up in, despite kind of being a little belittled for his run game performance, Lucas Patrick. I thought he did a phenomenal job stepping up as the third center for this team. And yeah, maybe he isn't the best run blocker, whatever. I mean, that really didn't bother me too much. The fact that he was able to cleanly, aside from one that I saw, snap the ball to Aaron Rodgers, get it in his hands, and protect him in the pass game. I mean, we have to give credit where credit is due. And for him to be able to step in from that guard position to center in the absence of Myers and with Elgton Jenkins still being hurt, I mean, just the versatility of the linemen in this group. I mean, we've seen them challenged week in and week out with the injuries and just kind of throwing guys in different positions and they're playing out of position. So for Lucas Patrick to be able to step into that role, I mean, he played a couple games at center when Lindsay got hurt a few years ago. So he has minimal experience, but I mean, for him to be able to go in there and play basically a clean game, I think that, you know, people aren't super happy with his run blocking. It is what it is. You know, he's not going to be perfect. He's in a role that he's not as familiar with, but for him to be able to step up and, you know, do what he did, I think we have to give him praise for that.
Yeah, for sure. And just one quick point off that, which you mentioned, the versatility. I just think overall, this entire Packers team, top to bottom, just with how versatile they are at in every area, on both the offensive line, defensive line, and the secondary with the receiving. I mean, they've clearly, Goody, since the day he took over as GM, versatility has obviously been his number one focus. And not only has he followed through on doing that, whether it's through the draft or through free agent signings, we're seeing the results of it, and they've been damn good. When you have guys that could do multiple things, it just makes it that much harder for your opponent on every level, every single week.
Yeah, I think that has to be one of the major feathers in Brian Gutekunst's cap, is the way that he's built out this offensive line, especially. Real quick before we get to stock down, for the Packers, some breaking NFL news.
Are you? Yeah.
This is wild. Yeah.
Tom Pelissero reporting that John Gruden is out as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Wow.
Insane. Absolutely. I mean, look, we all know, I mean, you know, for anyone who hasn't, I don't know exactly, like, I didn't, you know, read a lot about these emails that came out from him in 2011. Obviously, he said a lot of terrible things and things that he should never have said or even thought, but he did it and he put it out there. And clearly, it was strong enough for him to see that he needs to remove himself from the game, you know, what, 4 years, 4 or 5 years into a 10-year contract, which that alone was absurd that he got a 10-year
contract when you haven't coached in how long?
Not coaching in over a decade. and then getting a 10-year deal. I mean, doesn't get much more Raiders than that. But yeah, Dan, I mean, if you were going to say it, I was about to, because I was just, yeah, I just saw that flash across my screen. And I will not
Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is probably thankful that John Gruden has kind of stepped up and kind of taken over as the sleaziest coach of the week. And because I mean, not a good week for
two different camps of sleazy. I think that's in there.
Neither one is a good one, but yeah.
No, but yeah, John Gruden. Now, you may not have called that it was the emails, but if you thought that this was going to end anyway positive with John Gruden at the Raiders again in Las Vegas, you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah. Not watching the same football as everyone else.
No, nobody's stock is lower than John Gruden's right now.
His stock right now is off the market, to say the least.
First, the stock down. Let's talk about stock down for this Packers game. I want to start with this one, because I think it's a very broad jumping off point that we can talk a lot about, and it's the red zone offense and defense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the gold zone, you know, and the Packers have been terrible on both sides of the ball this year. And it didn't even register to me the defensive stat that they brought up like midway through the game on Sunday, that they've given up, that they were like seven, I think they ended up 18 for 18 the last opponent's drives into the red zone, scoring a touchdown. Like, that's not how this deep, I mean, granted, that's not old Joe Barry. Who knows what makes that change? Like, if that new system gets changed or whatever, but still, like, to have that hanging over your head 18 in a row like that, even if it's just this season, that's bad. If you just look at this season, it's bad to have that streak coming into that game. And then on the offensive side again, like, just so many frustrating play sequences in the red zone, you know, it's baffling. The one that absolutely threw me over the edge was in overtime. Devondre Campbell gets you an interception and you're inside the 20-yard line. You have, and I'm not usually one to say this, but
okay, yeah, please bring this up.
You have Aaron bleeping Rodgers and Devontae Adams having a career game, and you ran the ball twice up the middle and then elected to give Mason Crosby, who we're not ragging on him, but he wasn't having a good day. Or if he wasn't having a good day, the whole special kicking team wasn't playing well. And you relied on that. When you could just say, like, Aaron, you've got three shots to get us down there, get us close to see what happens. No, you ran the ball. That second and 10, they had nine guys up on the line of scrimmage. Like, they knew you were going to run the ball. I just want to see something more creative. And we know that it's there because we saw it all last year. And it's frustrating to keep seeing it now.
I mean, is creative kicking it on third down?
No.
Like, I still little bit of stock down for Matt LaFleur there. Like, why are you kicking it on third down? Use all your drives. You don't get an award. You don't get an extra point because you decided not to use your, like, kick it on fourth down.
I understand not doing it on third down there, because in a normal situation with Mason Crosby, I feel, because then you give yourself, if there's a bumbled snap, you can fall on it and kick it on fourth down. I understand his logic there, but it's the logic of giving Mason that shot or relying on Mason at that point when you have Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't comprehend why, yeah, when you have the offense you do, Devontae having a career high day, you have Aaron Rodgers, you have Jones and Dylan, and you have all these offensive weapons, and Mason Crosby, who is struggling, you're going to throw him out there to kick it on third down. I don't know. It was too too bizarre of a sequence, coming off of a huge interception from Campbell, and then kind of just wasted that whole thing, and then back to defense you go. So yeah, I mean, that was just, it was a mess that I still can't understand why it happened the way it did.
Janelle, do you have a stock down on your list for us?
I do, and I can't figure out how to word it as a stock down because it's not a player. It's a group of people revolving around a player. The stock down in the Kevin King hate train. I can't do it anymore. You know, Kevin King goes out and he actually has a relatively, you know, it's a quiet day for Kevin King, which means it's a good day for Kevin King. When you don't hear his name, it's a good day for him. And I think Zach Cruz said he only allowed 17 yards. He had two shutdowns. I mean, obviously he got hurt, but the whole Savage chase thing, people immediately thinking it's King. And I get like the mistake at first, but you know, when people are so locked into wanting to hate King that they just have their blinders on and they automatically assume any play like that is Kevin King, and they take to Twitter and start typing, and it's just, I can't do it. It's nauseating to me when, I mean, you're not getting any help from the crew covering the game who is like panning over to Kevin King. It's like, it's, you know, I don't know. I'm just so frustrated with it. And I think it's a lot because I want to see Kevin King succeed so badly that when he actually goes out there and is doing his job and people are still mad at him. Like, I saw tweets today where it was like, I think it was under that tweet from Zach Cruz, where he's kind of like, this is Kevin King's day. And people are still like, but the NFC Championship game. Let it go. I can't do it anymore. You know, that's one game, and it's not like he's the only person who didn't do well in that game. You know, it's just the inability to forgive him and move on and just, you know, he plays for your team. You should want him to succeed. So I can't do it anymore. You know, if he makes a bad play, whatever, but he wasn't even out there doing anything wrong, and he's still getting dragged on Twitter. And it's so infuriating to me, especially after a long, exhausting game like that, to see those kinds of things come out. And it's, you know, Kevin King, unfortunately, he gets hurt. He's actually in position to make a tackle and he gets karate kicked and goes out with a shoulder injury. It's unfortunate. You know, he's actually out there doing his job and he just has horrible luck. And I just feel like there's so many who don't want to see him succeed, and I can't do it anymore.
They will root for him to fail at every single corner. Whenever I could tweet something about Aaron Jones running the ball, and somehow I'll get a comment about Kevin King in some negative fashion. Every day there's someone in my mentions bringing up Kevin King for whatever. And rarely am I tweeting about Kevin King, and not that in a good or bad way. It's just, I'm not tweeting about him that often, but he is brought up day in and day out. And it's like, are you a Packer fan? Yes or no. If it's yes, then you're a Kevin King fan. He's on your team. That's the bottom line. Has he been perfect throughout his career? No. Did the NFC Championship game happen? Yes. But that, it's 2021. It's a new season. Why are you actively rooting against a player on the team that you supposedly root for? It drives me nuts. So I'm happy you brought that up, Jen.
Yeah. Thank you, because I just can't. It gives me such a headache. I'm stumbling over my words because I just can't believe that people are so, they want to see a player not succeed so bad.
Here's the thing. I don't know if they necessarily want to see him do bad. At this point, there's just a swath of Packer fans that treat him like a Jonah, you know?
Yeah.
You know, all these things are going bad. We can't get past the NFC Championship game. It's Kevin King's fault. And if we just got rid of Kevin King, that would alleviate all of our problems. And we would, you know, fall into the graces of God once again, you know? And like that's just not how this works. And especially once Jair Alexander goes on IR, Kevin King becomes even more important to this team. because look at, you saw Shamar Jean Charles is still at the 5-yard line of Paul Brown Stadium after Mixon, you know, planted him in the ground.
Yeah,
like it was nothing. And then the other guy that you see out there getting playing time is Isaac Yeadom, the guy from New York. So would you rather have Jean Charles or Yeadom over Kevin King? Because take Kevin King out, now it's Eric Stokes number one, and who's number two? You know, because Shannon Sullivan's been banged up. He can't be relied on, you know, every single week. So is it Eric Stokes and Yeadom or Shamar Jean Charles? Like, that, like, you need him there for the depth. He's a veteran player, and he's at least an average player, above average player at best, you know? And I mean, there, to sum it up, I calling my dad at halftime, who leads this group, Janelle, you know, complaining about another misplay from Kevin King, and I'm like, that wasn't King.
Yeah.
He's like, yes, it was. Yes, it was. Sent him the tweet of the dots, you know, the dot plays that they show everything, and I'm like, you can see King is 20, 30 yards away from this play. His response: I still don't like King. There is a swath of people that just want him gone.
And I get thinking it's him at first, because usually that's where he is in position. That's usually, like, that's just usually how he plays. And I get, you know, maybe a 0-6 kind of can look like, but it's like, once you realize it's Savage, there's still people who are persistent. And they're like, well, you know, Kevin King's still A, B, and C.
Yeah, they would like, oh, well, King would have done the same thing and missed it or something.
Yeah.
And it's just like.
And then it's like, if that was King, they would have just, you know, Twitter would have crashed. But because it was Savage, you know, all of a sudden it was like, oh, no, we're okay. So I don't know. I want King to succeed so bad. And I feel genuinely sorry for him, because he's trying. He really is. He goes out there as, you know, Jair gets hurt. And that's the whole, I think this is a lot of the reason why they brought him back, because he's familiar depth for this DB room and this cornerback room. And, you know, he's not allowing big plays in a game where they have, you know, the Bengals have a solid wide receiver core in Higgins, Chase, and Boyd. So I thought he did great. And it just sucks to see people still angry about him on Twitter after he had a good game.
Yeah. We're getting close on time here. So do you guys, is there any others real quick that you want to hit on stock down? Because I've got two that we could kind of just, that aren't big, but do you guys have any others that that you want to touch on?
You guys touched on mine.
Go ahead, Jen.
No, you guys basically touched on mine.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, beyond Mason Crosby, I don't know exactly who the personnel is, but whoever the hell is blocking the right side.
Oh, of yeah, that is one of mine.
Your head. It's insane. The free rusher off the right end, and we are inches, centimeters away from any kick being blocked. It's like, I've never seen, you know, for years we talk about the kick coverage, the punt coverage, and now it's like you can't simply block for Mason Crosby to get a field goal off. I mean, we saw for San Francisco, the game winner was a fingertip away from being blocked. So they need to figure out very quickly what the hell is going on that kick team, because you can't have free rub, because that's going to get into a kicker's head. Mason Crosby's pulling it left on all those kicks because he knows there's a free rusher coming off the right end. So they have to clean that up immediately.
Yeah, I did forget that I had that planted in my brain, but I just got so angry with the whole Kevin King thing. And I think, you know, when you can't figure out your blocking, but you're also not being efficient in the red zone, and you're relying on Mason Crosby to kick field goals. He had 13 of the 25 points. Mason Crosby had over half the points in that game, but you're also, you know, you're not efficient in the red zone, but you're also making it hard for your kicker to comfortably kick the ball because he's got somebody like a nail away every time. That ball is basically going through these guys' hands at this point. And it's, you know, I am, you know, the one against Pittsburgh, it didn't look offsides to me. They just got really lucky with that call, but it's been close way too many times. So yeah, I think maybe that's something Crosby has started to realize, and somebody needs to fix it, because it's going to get really ugly really fast, and you're going to take out, you're going to take out one of your best scorers in Mason Crosby if you can't figure out this blocking.
Yeah. The only other stock down that I had, because I had the kick coverage, and it really special teams in general was not good
on
Sunday. Looking at you, Boho, with a 30-yard putt. The only other one, and this isn't really that big of a one, but the referees with tripping again. Is this going to be all season long with this bleeping tripping nonsense? Because
that one could have. It couldn't have been more obvious. That was like one of those, I'm going to see if I can get away with it. All right, cool, I can.
Well, it's the one that they don't call on one side. And then the one that they do call, they look completely different. And just, I'm just wondering, like, is this something that's becoming a thing now? Like, I watch a lot of the other stuff, but I'm only usually watching Red Zone, so I'm not catching all of it, but it's like, it's just weird that, like, the last 3 weeks now, we've had some really weird sequences with tripping when
I don't think I've
season without it.
I can't remember a tripping call in any of the last, like, 5 seasons.
No.
And all of a sudden, 3 weeks in a row, there's either absurd ones called or blatant ones not being called. So it's weird, you know, the refs pick their favorite call, and that's what, so it's going to be a tripping year, guys. Just it doesn't get called against Aaron Rodgers. You
stock
can,
up on tripping. Buy low, sell high.
You can trip Aaron Rodgers. You can't trip anyone else.
Exactly.
So watch out for the Bears, because I'm sure they're going to use that tactic.
Exactly. I mean, I think I put on Twitter saying that I've seen more tripping calls in the last 3 weeks than the last 3 years. I don't remember really in my life seeing very many tripping calls in the NFL. Yes, there are a few that stick out, but for 3 weeks in a row, there to be controversy over tripping calls is insane to me. And I said it on an open book, and I'll say it here also. I mean, just officiating in general, I believe this year has just been awful. And you know what? I'm not going to just say it for the Packers. Jen mentioned it with the black pick versus the Steelers. If I was a Steelers fan, I would be absolutely infuriated, because bottom line, he probably was not off. I mean, it was as close as it could possibly be. But in my opinion, watching every angle, I don't think he was offsides. I just think he jumped that ball the best way you could physically could, and they called it offsides. At the end of the day, that was obviously a huge, huge play. We give up a block field goal touchdown. That's a 10-point swing. We could have easily lost that game. So just overall, NFL officiating, get it together, because we've seen year after year teams lose in the playoffs due to officiating. And at a certain point, it's like, when is it going to end? Yes, everyone's human, and we don't want to slow down the game too much, but you can't let refs and their terrible on-time, just, you know, live decisions decide things. At a certain point, penalty, I don't know how you want to do it, maybe in the final 2 minutes or certain penalties, certain yardage, whatever it is, there needs to start being people getting away, you know, calls coming from people other than the refs, because they've just been awful. And look, people are people, you're not going to be perfect, but it's been beyond awful. It's disgusting.
Yep, well said. Eli came in double guns, both barrels blazing.
I am literally like sweating right now. Like, I'm actually angry about this, because it bothers me. You know, teams work their ass off, and for some ref to go and cost them a potential game,
look at last night, Sunday night. That game was one of the most poorly officiated games I've ever seen.
For how long? How long will the NFL sit by and watch their games being viewed by tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people get ruined because of a bad call? At a certain point, you need to say, no, we're going to the booth, we're going to look at it from every possible angle. I don't care if it slows it down. I would rather sit for 5 minutes watching a review and getting it right than seeing a team lose a game because you guys don't want to slow down the game, or you don't want to embarrass your own refs. The refs are embarrassing themselves anyway.
Bam. That's a great way to finish it. I like that. I can't add anything else to that. Guys, you want to let people know where they can find you, where they can find all your stuff, and what you got to promote this week, you know?
Yeah, so most of my stuff you can find on Twitter at BigMac_4. I do have my Linktree link in my bio. That's where you'll be able to find all my Pack-A-Day, my Game On Wisconsin open book stuff, my Packer Report stuff. If you like my content, good, because there's a lot of it out there right now. So those are the main ones. I also do some stuff with Say It Again Network. So yeah, just click that link and that'll bring you to all of my nonsense.
Eli?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's, you know, nonsense, but Jen obviously killing it in the content game right now. And you can find me and Jen and Zachary Jacobson every week on Open Book Wednesday nights, 8:45 Central. And you can find my writing at PackerReport.com and at FantasyPros.com. And again, I mean, any content that I produce will go through my Twitter page at BookofEli_NFL. So if you're lazy like me and just want to find it all in one place, just head to Twitter, BookofEli_NFL, and you'll find everything you need.
Yeah, you can find me at DK All The Way on Twitter. That's where really all my shenanigans go down. You can find me every Wednesday night on Game On Wisconsin's YouTube channel with Lombardi's Bar, 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central. And every Friday morning, my piece for Game On Wisconsin goes up, The Leap, with just weekend, week-long musings and everything else pack-related. Guys, we will be back again in 2 weeks. We'll be talking about the game against the Washington football team, the team that maybe got a bit of a pass in the whole John Gruden email scandal as well, but we'll see how the rest of this plays out. But until then, guys, enjoy Bears Hate Week, and we will talk to you again. Until then, Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.